entered this disgraceful revolution, he would not have thought to rise up against the government. Such sentiments are common among the aristocracy here. They have an unhealthy identification with the late Tsar. What did he believe? I asked, as a matter of curiosity. Oh, he took it into his head to convert to a vile farrago of Oriental superstitions, nothing as honest and Aryan as theosophy. He picked these filthy beliefs up in Mongolia nearly 10 years ago when visiting. He met a witch doctor, by all accounts, a man called the Bogd Khan. She rattled on at some length about this. Would you mind if I read his letters on religion? I asked her, and to cut a long story short, she acceded. I now have not only Ungern Sternberg's fossil collection, inherited from his father, but his surviving letters, those he sent to his mother, and they are very interesting indeed. I attach my admittedly imperfect translation of selected extracts of his letters from 1920. I will forward the originals by separate cover from the fossils. Meanwhile, I strongly recommend that you should motivate your fellows in the order to start searching for the missing teapot. Your obedient friend, Arthur Ransom. There comes a time in every counter-espionage investigation when you have to grit your teeth, admit that you're at your wit's end, admit defeat, and bugger off home for a Chinese takeaway and a night in front of the telly. Then you get a good night's sleep, except for the nocturnal eructations induced by too much black bean sauce, and awaken, refreshed and revived, and in a mood to do battle once more with... bollocks. I have gotten somewhere. I now know that the missing file is called the Fuller Memorandum, which, by a huge leap of inductive logic, I hope I'm not getting ahead of myself here, I deduce is a memorandum, by or about F. It was filed in 1941, was absolutely mega top secret burn before reading stuff 65 years ago, and has some bearing on Case Nightmare Green. It's also missing. Those last three facts would be enough to give me industrial-grade stomach ulcers if it was my fault. Luckily, it's not my fault. All I have to do is find Angleton, and I'm sure he can explain it all, and also explain what the flaming fuck it has got to do with Bloody Baron. This much is not time-critical. Getting that Chinese takeaway, with or without black bean sauce, is time-critical, lest I starve to death on the case. Going home and doing sweet, sappy, quality-time things with Mo is time-critical too, lest she files for divorce on grounds of neglect. And so is not having a nervous breakdown while waiting for the Board of Inquiry findings, lest I find myself without a career, in which case they'll put me in charge of pushing that handcart full of dusty files around the department. So, I stand up, stretch, push the off button on the Memex, and leave Angleton's lair. I pause briefly in my own rabbit hutch of an office, scan my email, respond to a couple of trivial pestiferations. No, I am no longer in charge of the structured cabling specifications for D-Block. Yes, I am still attached to the International Common Insourcing and Acquisition Standards Committee for my sins in a previous life. No, I do not have a desktop license for Microsoft Office because my desktop PC is a Microsoft-free zone for security reasons, and would you like fries with that? The scanner has finished digesting all those dusty letters from Arthur to John. I squirt the PDFs across to the Necronomipod, and then I grab my backpack and umbrella and head for home. Iris isn't in her office as I pass the window, and Rita on the front desk has pissed off early. Then I check my watch and do a double take. It's 6:40. Shit. Mo will kill me, I think, as I head down the main staircase at a fast clip and barrel through the staff exit. This is London, South Bank, south of the centre, north of Tooting, and west of Wandsworth. Come on, you can alliterate too. Suburban High Street, UK. It is early evening, and the streets are still crowded, but most of the shops are closed. Meanwhile, the pubs are half full with a sort of hardcore post-work crowd that go drinking on a Monday evening. I turn left, walking towards the nearest tube station. It's 15 minutes away, but once it gets this late, there's no point waiting for a bus. This is London. The worst thing that can happen to you is usually a mugging at knife point, and I do my best not to look like a promising victim, which is why it takes me a couple of minutes to realize that I'm being tailed. In fact, it takes until the three of them move to box me in. At that point, disbelief is futile. I've done the mandatory escape and evasion training, not to mention Streetwise 101. I just wasn't expecting to need it here. Two of them are strong, silent types, in black leather biker jackets worn over white tees and jeans. They've got short, stubbly, blonde hair and the sort of muscles you get when you go through a Spetsnaz training course. Not bodybuilders, more like triathletes. They come up behind me and march along either side, too damn close. The third of them, who I guess is their boss, is a middle-aged man in a baggy Italian suit, his open shirt collar stating that he's off the office clock and on his own time. He slides in just ahead and to the left of thug number one as I glance sideways. He winks at me.
"Please to follow this way," he says.
I glance to my right. Thug number two matches my stride step for step. He stares at me like a police dog that's had its vocal cords severed. I glimpse his eyes and look away hastily. Shit. "Who are you?" I ask, my tongue dry and stumbling, as Mr. Baggy Suit pauses in the doorway of the Frog and Tourette's.
"You may wish to call me Panin."
He smiles faintly.
"Nikolai Panin. It's not my real name, but it will serve."
He gestures at the door.
"Please allow me to buy you a drink. I assure you, my intentions are honorable."
My ward is itching. Nevertheless, I am disinclined to bet my life on it. Panin, whoever he is a player. His definition of honorable might not encompass allowing me to escape with my life, but he's unlikely to start something in the middle of a pub with an after-work crowd. "Would you mind leaving the muscle outside?" I ask. I assume they're not drinking.
"Нет."
He snaps his fingers and says something to the two revenants. They split, taking up positions to either side of the street front of the pub.
"After you,"
he says, waving me into the entrance. If I was James Bond, this is the point at which I would draw my concealed pistol, plug both